From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. Happy New Year. Today we continue our series of interviews featuring staff picks from the decade that just ended with some of our favorite live performances. First, our session with the Carolina Chocolate Drops featuring Rhiannon Giddens. They brought their fiddles, banjos, bones, and jug to perform songs from the black string band tradition. After that, it's our performance by Catherine Russell, who sang backup for Steely Dan and David Bowie before starting her own solo career, specializing in early jazz songs. We'll conclude with John Batiste, bandleader of The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. He joined us at the piano to play, sing, and show us a bit of how he does what he does.
I can slide. I can cry.
First News. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Happy New Year and Happy New Decade. Today we continue our End of the Decade series featuring staff picks from the 2010s or whatever we called that decade. Today, some of our favorite studio concerts that we recorded over the last 10 years. First up is the Carolina Chocolate Drops, a group that follows in the tradition of black string bands from the 1920s and 30s. They all play a variety of instruments, including fiddle, guitar, banjo, and bones. We recorded this interview in 2010, when the Chocolate Drops consisted of Dom Flemons, Justin Robinson, and Rhiannon Giddens. Only Giddens is still with the Chocolate Drops, and all three have gone on to have solo careers. We started the concert with them performing Your Baby Ain't Sweet Like Mine.
Everybody talking about the sweetie nowadays. I got the one with the sweetest ways. Your baby may roll a jelly fine. Nobody's baby can't roll it like mine. Your baby ain't sweet like mine. She bake a jelly roll all the time. And when I'm feeling lonesome and blue, my baby knows just what to do. Yes, she even called me a honey. She even let me spend the money. Never has a baby put me out though. She even buys me all my clothes. I don't wanna brag, just wanna put you in line. Your baby ain't sweet like mine, no, no. Your baby ain't sweet like mine. Oh, I'll play that home. Oh, play like Mr. Dom Lockett. Yeah, mine can look very good. Blowing at you. She bake a jelly roll all the time. And when I'm feeling lonesome and blue, my baby knows just what to do. Yes, sir, she even called me honey. She even let me spend the money. Never had a baby put me out though. She even buys me all my clothes. I don't wanna brag, just wanna put you in line. Your baby ain't sweet like mine, no, no. Your baby ain't sweet like mine.
Fantastic. That's the Carolina Chocolate Drops. Who chose that song and why?
Oh, that was a song that I chose. That was a piece that was originally recorded by a fellow named Papa Charlie Jackson, who was a six-string banjo player out of New Orleans. And I just really liked the number, and a lot of his numbers aren't performed anymore. So that was one that I've kept in my repertoire for quite a while.
String bands are usually considered a white Southern tradition. And you're a band of African-American musicians. And you've found a black string band tradition that you feel part of. But did you fall in love with this music before you knew that there was a black string band tradition?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What did you fall in love with about it?
Well, I fell in love with the rhythm. I was a contra dancer and square dancer, and I just... was seduced by the banjo, the rhythm of the clawhammer banjo. That just really pulled me in. And then I found out about the history, and then I went, oh, this is really deep. And then it just kind of, I was done for then, you know, that was it.
So discovering this music and falling in love with it without knowing there was an African-American tradition, did you feel like maybe you weren't supposed to like it? You know, maybe you would never fit in with it. Maybe there wouldn't be a place for you. Or people would think you were odd to gravitate toward the music.
Well, definitely the odd thing, that's a definite. Just because there, any black person who's involved in a folk music scene anywhere knows that it's either they've been just the one of them or maybe someone else. And I think that's how I was in Phoenix. I was the only black person, but I was also the only person that was under like 40 in the scene in Phoenix that right. I was in.
Uh-huh.
But I just kind of plowed on myself, and I know Justin had a really similar story.
Yeah, I Oh Lord, I just forgot the question.
Weird, being a weird black person.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's it. Being a weird black person.
We're all really familiar with being a weird black person.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, it was sort of, I didn't have the same thing with the age thing, because there were certainly lots of people when I started playing in Chapel Hill. There were certainly lots of people around my age doing it, but I certainly was the only black person at the time doing it. But that was not going to stop me. I mean, I think it's characteristic of all of us is that we were sort of misfits, you might say, in our own rights when we grew up. So doing something just because it wasn't cool or because you weren't supposed to, we're certainly not any stranger to that.
Yeah, I was sort of used to it because I was, after I graduated from college, I really got into like Scottish music. So I was always getting, how come you're playing this kind of music, you know? And so I was just kind of used to that. So it didn't really... I just kind of just kept on going, just like Justin was saying.
How come you were playing that kind of music?
Oh, I just liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there's really nothing more to it than that.
Well, you were already used to not being cool, too, because, I mean, you sang opera before doing this. That's
yeah.
a pretty quick way to not be cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Part of the tricky aspect of string band music is that part of its roots are in minstrel shows, part of its roots are in blackface. And so it gets really kind of complicated when you go back to the early history of that music. So I wonder what it's been like for you to negotiate that aspect of the music and to deal with separating the music itself from some of the stereotypes that were foisted on the musicians who played it.
I think something that we have that as a new generation of player in the old time music is that we are educated and we're approaching the music at an emotional distance that just has not been there in earlier generations. Before you'd look back at those aspects of history. And people just would say, don't touch that. That's the worst stuff in the world, and that's what's ruining the world. And now, in this generation, we're able to actually start piecing those things apart just because, we want to take the benefits and also try to make what's right or see what actually happened or what was misappropriate or what was good. Because the thing about a lot of the black string band music is, not much of the music was put down on recording, and that's a very essential part of understanding black music is hearing it. And, delving into it, you find some things that are off-putting, but at the same time, you got to think in the context of the past instead of thinking in the context of the present.
And that's been something in the African-American community it's not something that we've done very much of, is looking back. You know, it's really been a forward push for lots of different reasons. And as Don was saying, I think we are one of the first generations who, I mean, there's still a lot of stuff that's, you know, needs to be fixed. And there's a lot of people that are still, you know, in bad situations. But I think as a whole, we're one of the first generations in the African-American community that has been able to look back without personally being as touched by it. You know, like our parents, they went through the civil rights movement. They went through all of these things, and they're really personally wrapped up into a lot of this stuff. Whereas we're of a generation where we're getting it filtered mm-hmm. through our parents and our grandparents, and that we can step back and go, okay, so what can we glean from this, and what can we take from some of this really painful stuff that, you know, we might want to just kick under the rug? What can we take from it that it's the good stuff? You know, a lot of our early African-American history, you know, there's a lot of bad stuff in there, but, you know, there's a lot of good stuff too. I mean, the minstrel shows and the stereotyping, and that's all clearly very bad, but there's a lot of great music and dance, and there's a lot of black musicians and dancers who persevered through the stereotype and who were able to, you know, show their skill and their entertaining, and they were able to do that. And so what we can take the good stuff from that now, I think, along with knowing that there was bad stuff.
Now, Dom, among the instruments you play are four-string banjo, bones, and jug. Do you actually use like animal bones, or are they?
Yeah, in one hand I do have cow bones, and in my other hand I carry wood bones. But that's just a sound thing.
Get out the cow bones for us.
All right, cow bones are set.
Are cows, like, do cows have the best bones for percussion?
Well, they have big bones, and that makes for the best, like, you know, you can't use the little ribs that you see in, you know, the smaller pork ribs in the barbecue shack or anything. You have to have the big Texas Longhorn, like, bones. And I haven't made any myself. I've been fortunate that people have given me different bones, and it's a pretty intense process, but I've heard different ways to do it. One fella told me that you can put it next to an anthill and then throw it on the roof for a week.
The anthill is so to eat off the meat?
Yeah. Yeah, because that's what, I mean, you got to remember, when you got these gigantic bones that have all the meat and the fat on it, and you got to get all that off. And the two ways I've found is that, put it next to an anthill, and the other one is boil it in water for a couple of days. And I heard that that's an awful thing to have in a house. And once you get the meat and stuff off it, then you have to, you either bake them in an oven, and like I said before, throw them on the roof, or just dry them out. And once they're dry, you cut the bone down, because at first they're gigantic. You cut those bones down and you sand them. And then you can put a lacquer on it, or, you know, a lacquer, or, you know, whatever you want to do after that to make them look nice.
I'd like to ask you to perform another song. And the song is Trouble in Your Mind. So before you play it for us, tell us why you chose it and what you love about the song.
Well, this is one that Justin was playing that I reminded him one day at a jam that he played it. And it's a piece from an album called Music from the Lost Provinces, put out by Old Hat Records. And it's just a nice breakdown, and we just started doing it.
Okay, let's hear it.
Trouble in your mind, don't get trouble in your mind. Don't get trouble in your mind, don't get trouble in your mind. If you see that gal of mine, you tell her if you can. For she goes to make my bread, washing at your hand. Don't get trouble in your mind, don't get trouble in your mind. Don't get trouble in your mind, don't get trouble in your mind. Yeah.
That was the Carolina Chocotrops doing Trouble in Your Mind, recorded in 2010 on Fresh Air. If you enjoyed that, we also have solo performances and interviews with Dom Flemons and Rhiannon Giddens, which you can find on our new Fresh Air Archive site. That's at fresharchive.org. Coming up, a concert with one of my favorite contemporary jazz singers, Catherine Russell. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we're listening back to some of our favorite live concerts from the past decade. Next, we have a performance by a singer who I consider one of the best jazz and blues singers around, Catherine Russell. A lot of the material she does dates back to the 1930s and 40s. Her father, Louis Russell, was a pianist, composer, and arranger, and worked as Louis Armstrong's music director in the mid-40s. Her mother, Carlene Ray, performed with the all-women's band, the International Sweethearts of Rhythm. Catherine Russell came to our studio in 2012 when she released her album Strictly Romancin'. She was accompanied by guitarist Matt Munisteri. They started with the song Under the Spell of the Blues, which was an early hit for Ella Fitzgerald when she was with the Chick Webb Orchestra.
I turn my head to the sky when you pass by, but I want to cry because my heart is under the spell of the blues. For I go around acting gay, say it's okay, pretending each day, but I'm alone and under the spell of the blues. Since we're apart, the dawn brings only heartache to me. You're gone, I'm like a lost ship at sea. In my misery, I'd say that I'm satisfied. No use to hide what goes on inside. It's true, my heart is under the spell of the blues. Since we're apart, the dawn brings only heartache to me. You're gone, I'm like a lost ship at sea. In my misery, I'd say that I'm satisfied. No use to hide what goes on inside. It's true, my heart is under the spell of the blues.
That's fabulous. Thank you so much for performing that. That's Catherine Russell singing in our studio, accompanied by Matt Munisteri on guitar. Thank you so much. That's so beautiful. I love your voice so much. I love a lot of early jazz and pop, and one of the things I love about your work is that you love that music and you bring it to life in such a beautiful and committed way.
Thank you very much.
And you know the language of it. I mean, I think a lot of singers don't have the right rhythm when they sing old songs, because they grew up with rock and they just don't feel a jazz rhythm. But you grew up with jazz.
I grew up with jazz, but I grew up with rock too. I grew up with blues. I grew up with classical. My mother had an old radio in the kitchen when I was growing up, and we used to listen to William B. Williams' Make Believe Ballroom.
On WNEW.
On WNEW,
yes.
Yeah, AM. Every morning I was listening to Ella, the Mills Brothers, Steve Lawrence, Anita Gourmet, Judy Garland, whatever, Peggy Lee, everything that was popular of the day, and before that. So that was late 50s, early 60s now. So that really kind of formed my appreciation of phrasing of how the people sang these tunes in those days. So I always, you know, was in the mirror with a toothbrush when I was a little girl trying to sing these songs and everything.
No, I grew up with that radio station too, because my parents listened to it, and I hated it then. I hated it because I wanted to hear rock and roll.
Yeah.
But you grew up with parents who were jazz performers.
Yeah.
You know, your father, the late Louis Russell, was Louis Armstrong's music director for a while. Your mother sang with the International Sweethearts of Rhythm during World War II, which is an all-women jazz band. And so did the fact that they loved the music bring the music alive for you?
Yes. My dad's music was some of the first music I ever heard in the house growing up. And my mother was so happy that I kind of took to it you know, when I was very little, because I like to dance and I love swing. And so, yes, I would say that their appreciation of traditional and different types of jazz kind of formed my young ears.
Were they determined to get you to love the music? Did they play you things and hope that you would love it?
No, they, you know, Mom played a lot of different things. So she's happy that I did, but she also let me listen to things that she didn't particularly like. I grew up in American Bandstand, so if there were groups on there, she never told me, oh, turn that stuff off, I hate it. Never. She always let me listen to my Led Zeppelin records loud. She let me, you know. So she, you know, got me a little stereo, and I had it, you know, the kind that you pick up. And I had that in my room when I was growing up, and she never said, turn that down, I hate it, this is terrible. She always let me listen to everything I wanted to listen to.
We're listening back to a concert we recorded in 2012 with jazz singer Catherine Russell and guitarist Matt Munisteri. After a short break, we'll hear more, and we'll listen back to an excerpt of our concert and interview with pianist John Batiste, who's also the band leader for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. This is Fresh Air.
Hello? Hello? Is this Harlem 77711? Hello, John. Is this you? I tried to phone you. I hope you ain't sick. But I'm checking out Mumbai. Nice to have known you. You were my big kid. But I'm checking out Mumbai. You tried no trick. You found a new chick. But I was too slick. I'm in the know. You got to go. The cake is all done. It's too bad. I'll bliss.
The Neubauer Family Foundation supports WHYY's Fresh Air and its commitment to sharing ideas and encouraging meaningful conversation. Support for NPR comes from this station and from Warner Brothers Pictures, presenting Just Mercy, based on the true story of a modern hero. Starring Michael B. Jordan, Jamie Foxx, and Brie Larson. Now playing in select theaters everywhere January 10th. And from ProQuest, creators of ProQuest One Academic, unifying journals, ebooks, videos, and dissertations across disciplines in one mobile-enabled interface. ProQuest.com/go/NPR.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This week, we're looking back on the decade that just ended and listening to some of our favorite interviews from the past 10 years. Today, we're featuring a few of our favorite concerts. Let's get back to the one with jazz and blues singer Catherine Russell and guitarist Matt Munisteri that we recorded in our studio in 2012. That's when Russell released her album, Strictly Romancin'. Well, I'm going to ask you to perform another song, and this song is called Wake Up and Live, and I love this song. I was not familiar with it until you sang it. Tell us why you chose it.
This is another song that I actually heard when I was growing up. I remember this. It's written by Matt Gordon and Harry Revel, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I remember that from the radio as well, so I think that William B. Williams played that one also. And on the Chick Webb, that's also from this Chick Webb collection, it's a vocal trio on that collection, and I remember that recording very faintly when I was little, and Cab Calloway also recorded it, so I loved his version too, and it just reminds me that I have to really do something with my life. You know, I like to sleep late and everything, so this is a good song for me.
And I should mention that Matt Gordon, the lyricist for this song, also wrote the lyrics for Chattanooga Choo Choo, I Had the Craziest Dream, The More I See You, and There Will Never Be Another You.
Yeah.
And Harry Revel wrote There's a Lull in My Life, which is a great song.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Beautiful.
So let's hear
it. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Wake up and live, don't mind the rainy patter, and you'll find it's mind over matter. Dark clouds will break up if you just wake up and live. Yeah, wake up and live, show the stuff you're made of, just follow through. What are you afraid of? You'll try it, won't you? Why don't you wake up and live? Come out of your shell. Hey, fella, find your place in the sun. Come out of your shell. Say, fella, just be a go-getting son of a gun. Wake up and live. If Lady Luck is yawning, up on your toes, a better day is dawning. Don't let up, get up and give. Just give yourself a shake-up just to wake up and live. Come out of your shell. Hey, fella, find your place in the sun. Come out of your shell. Say, hey, fella, just be a go-getting son of a gun. Yeah, wake up and live. If Lady Luck is yawning, up on your toes, a better day is dawning. Don't let up, get up and give. Just give yourself a shake-up just to wake up and live.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you both so much. That's Catherine Russell singing with Matt Munisteri featured on guitar. So let's talk about your first regular gig in New York. I should mention you were a backup singer before you became a soloist.
For many years, yeah.
And,
yeah.
But one of your first regular jobs, maybe your first regular job, was at Catch a Rising Star, a comedy club in New York, where you sang when the checks were being given out, when
yes.
It was really noisy. And when there was like a famous comedian testing out a new routine, none of the other comics would want to follow
them.
Wanted
to follow him, yes.
So you would kind of sing right in between to break it up a bit.
Yeah.
So it wasn't necessarily going to be your crowd because they're a crowd who came to see comedy, not music. What songs went over for that crowd?
It was a 15-minute slot for everybody. So comedians, singers, there are a few of us that sang. And so I chose soul and blues. So I would sing three songs, and the first song would be a kind of an up-tempo soul tune. The second one would be blues or some kind of a ballad like, Aretha Franklin. And then the third one would be an up-tempo tune, and so I wouldn't finish the tune. So the band would kind of keep playing, and I'd say, good night, everybody, you know, and leave the stage. And so really, after whatever comedian was on, the singer, they'd announce the singer, and the people would go, you could hear it. You could hear it in the crowd. So not only weren't they my audience, but, you know, it would take a tune or two to kind of have them say, oh, all right, she can sing, you know, it's okay. And then they would go back to tallying up their checks.
Catherine Russell and Matt Munisteri recorded in 2012. Russell released a new album in 2019 called Alone Together, on which Munisteri also plays guitar and serves as music director. Coming up, we feature our performance and interview with pianist John Batiste, the band leader for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. But before we get to that, let's get in one more song from Russell and Munisteri's Fresh Air performance. This is Everything's Been Done Before. Louis Armstrong recorded this when Catherine Russell's father, Louis Russell, was Armstrong's music director.
Everything's been done before. To share a kiss, a moment's bliss, and hear you whisper you love me. Sweetheart, it thrills as old as the hills, but it's new to me. Oh, everything's been done before. The birds that sing the song of spring, always singing above me. Yet with you, the singing of something that's new to me. Life is strange, we hate to change from what is tried and true. Although I know I'm only doing what the others do, yet it all seems new. Oh, everything's been done before. To fall in love with stars above began with Adam and Eve. But when I'm with you, I just wanna do what's been done before.
That's Catherine Russell and Matt Munisteri. Stick around for John Batiste right after a short break. This is Fresh Air.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from the Joyce Foundation, committed to advancing racial equity and economic mobility for the next generation in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at joycefdn.org. And from the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, an online resource dedicated to improving the learning experience for America's students with information and strategies about what works in K-12 education. Learn more at edutopia.org.
This is Fresh Air. This week, we're looking back on the decade that just ended and listening back to some of our favorite interviews of the past 10 years. Today, we're featuring some of our favorite performances. Our final one today is with pianist John Batiste, the music director at The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, where he leads his band Stay Human. Batiste grew up in Kenner, Louisiana, just outside of New Orleans, and is part of one of the foremost music families in that region. He started playing with the family band when he was 8. He played drums back then. When he was 17, he moved to New York to attend Juilliard. We recorded this interview in 2018 when Batiste released his album Hollywood Africans. We started with a track from it, an original called Kenner Boogie. John Batiste, welcome to Fresh Air. I really love your playing, and I'm so grateful to you for being at the piano. So, I have to, this is a really corny, dumb question to ask a pianist, I know, but how do you do it? How do, like on Kenner Boogie that we just heard, how do you coordinate the left and right hands? They're doing such different things, and what they're doing is so complex. can you break down what each hand is doing?
Absolutely.
And can you include some of those really like rumbly left hand chords you've got going on there?
You got to.
Thank you.
I think the great thing about piano is that you can create this rhythmic momentum and it propels you. It's like a drum, but you also have tones. So what I'm doing in my left hand is really creating the rhythm section effect of having a bass and a drum and maybe even a Barry sax down there tooting and rooting. me, so I'm getting this going. Or I'm doing something like, you know, like something you might hear Fats Domino or Lil Richard doing, and just really keeping that going down there. So while I got that happening in my right hand, I'm screaming, I'm wailing, I'm trying to figure out a way to make you feel what it is that I feel. And I can do that in many different ways. I can slide. I can cry. And I can even do a little bit of dancing. Let me do the dance one more time.
And some of the left hand playing that you have going on in that track is really kind of rumbly. Can you do some of the mm-hmm. chords that you've included in that composition?
Well, sometimes the emotion overwhelms you and you have to growl. And there's something that I've kind of developed with my left hand that I really love when I get that feeling. It's like a growl of a lion. This thing. So I'll be playing, you know.
That's what I was talking about.
So, you know, you put them all together and, you know, it's like a gumbo. You put everything in the pot and in the moment you just fly. You know, after you make your 100 vat of gumbo, you get a feel for where to place these things. And it's not really contrived. It just is a spirit in a moment that you follow.
So you grew up in Louisiana near New Orleans in Kenner. What were some of the most common rhythms? And you started as a drummer in your family's band. So what were some of the rhythms that you were taught to play as a drummer that helped guide you in your formative years as a pianist? Things that you transferred to piano?
Well, there's an African rhythm that is at the base of much of New Orleans music, and that's the Bambula rhythm. And before I even understood that I was being taught this rhythm, or that I was internalizing this rhythm, rather, I was. And it goes like this. It's you hear, oh, little Liza Jane. Oh, little Liza Jane. Oh, when the saints go marching in. Oh, when the saints go marching in. It's in so much of our repertoire. And me being the youngest drummer in my family at the time, there were four other drummers, my cousins, and not only was I learning the Bambula, but I was learning it from them, so I had four variations of it. So by the time I started really playing and getting to the piano, I had such a rhythmic approach to it that it's still with me today.
So do you want to translate that rhythm to something that you do at the piano?
Well, there's a piece on the album, Nocturne Number 1, and it has that rhythm.
Yeah, I love that piece.
Yes, it's really something that kind of takes that rhythm, but also my classical music training and love for the form and development of those sort of theme and variation, and kind of matches them up and creates what I like to call a gold mine. So that's the rhythm it is.
You're listening back to John Batiste, recorded on Fresh Air in 2018. We'll hear more of that after we take a short break. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to my 2018 interview with pianist John Batiste, who is at the piano. He's the music director for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert and leads the band. I hear so much Monk in your playing. Again, not imitating him, but having kind of absorbed him and made it your own. Things I hear you doing that remind me of Monk is your use of dissonance, your use of kind of punctuation, your use of space, of letting things ring out and not filling it, and the kind of angularity of Monk. Mm-hmm. So can you play something of your own that incorporates the kinds of things we've been talking about?
Oh, absolutely. There's a piece that I recorded twice, and it's titled Red Beans, and it's a blues. And when you hear the melody, it has that rhyme and also that space and dissonance that's characteristic of Monk, but I never copy. I try to absorb, which is what I hope I've done with this piece.
That's great. Do you still listen to a lot of Monk?
I have a few people who I listen to regularly. I always come back to them, I'll say. I don't listen to Monk regularly, but I always come back to his music. Bach is another one. James Brown, Nina Simone. Oh, my goodness.
Okay, let's do a little contrast here. Some Bach and how that's influenced you.
Oh, my goodness. Well, there's so much there. I think that Bach is really the mysticism of music, spirituality of music, the depth of how he's able to be so systematic and logical, symmetrical at times, super symmetrical to the point of it almost being a musical game of sorts, yet it harboring such a depth of human feeling, the range of human emotions, and asking questions about the afterlife. I mean, the St. Matthew's Passion, I was listening to that maybe yesterday, a couple of days ago. It's about 3 hours long. And just listening to that makes you realize what's possible. He's arguably the best at a thing that anyone's ever been in the history of doing a thing.
can you play an example of Bach that you think exemplifies both like the spiritual but also the kind of game-like aspect of it in its structure?
Oh my, you know, there's something in the Inventions, which, I mean, he's just chilling at home and he's like, it's tough out there in the streets, y'all, so kids, I'm gonna write you these inventions. And he writes these pieces that are among the most standard of the repertoire. If you're a classical pianist, you have to know these inventions. It was some of the first things I learned. And you research and find out he wrote these for his kids. So, but there are two voices, which I really enjoy. You know, there's... That's the left hand and the right hand. And if you... And it's moving all of a sudden, but it's just two voices.
Mm-hmm.
And the you see, the simplicity of how he makes something that is just two melodies playing in conversation, asking questions, responding. Sometimes they're talking at the same time. Other times it's call and response. Sometimes it's in harmony. Sometimes there's dissonance. Just... That's life. That's our journey exemplified in a simple piece that he wrote for his kids. That's amazing.
What I sometimes do on the show when I'm talking to a musician who's doing a kind of musical autobiography is to ask them to redeem a song, to take a song that we wouldn't expect them to like that they do, or a song that we think of as square, too corny, too sentimental, a song beyond redemption, but that you love. So is there a song like that that comes to mind that you would like to redeem for us?
Well, I love Happy and You Know It. I really like that song.
Is this
I
the
like
children's
what it
song
represents.
That you're talking about?
Yes.
Happy and You Know
if
It.
If you're happy, you know it, clap those hands.
And why do you
yes.
love this?
It's something that... I like about these kind of melodies, these kind of nursery rhymes, the children's melodies that are just so coherent, and they have a almost like this. It's that question and answer thing that I just love in music that we were talking about earlier with Thelonious Monk. Of course, Monk is much more complex. But it's at the root of it, it's the same thing, which is why I think children can respond to it in such an intuitive way. This is kind of... And then... And that's it. Oh, I get it. Now, if you put a bass line on it, and some different harmonies on it, you can get a vibe like a... Get some church on it, just bring out some of the emotions of it. And then when you play... You know, just I don't know. I like it. It's cool.
Oh, I like it now. I like what you did with it.
It's like, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands, Lord. If you're happy and you know it and you really want to show it, go on and show it. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
John Batiste, you have been so wonderful. I am so grateful to you. Thank you so much. You've been so generous with your music, with us, and in general. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. And till next time.
John Batiste, recorded in 2018. Today we featured a few of our favorite concerts we've done over the past decade. If you want to hear more Fresh Air concerts from the last decade, or previous decades, it's easy at our new Fresh Air Archive site. You can find it at freshairarchive.org. Tomorrow on Fresh Air, we continue our series of staff picks from the decade, We'll hear the interview I recorded with Ta-Nehisi Coates after the publication of his best-selling book, Between the World and Me, and the final interview I recorded with the late Toni Morrison, whose writing influenced many writers, including Coates. I hope you'll join us. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our technical director and engineer is Audrey Bentham. Our associate producer for digital media is Molly C.V. Nesper. Sam Brigger produced and directed today's show. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from the Joyce Foundation, committed to advancing racial equity and economic mobility for the next generation in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at joycefdn.org. And from the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, an online resource dedicated to improving the learning experience for America's students with information and strategies about what works in K-12 education. Learn more at edutopia.org.